Life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we respond to it. The right mindset is what separates most successful people from the average person. Changing your mindset can be one of the most valuable skills you can learn to help you create your own kick-ass life. Well, we want to help you begin that process today and give you a free copy of David Wood's training, Mindset, Your Key to Success. In this downloadable training, you'll learn how to develop a winner's mindset, how to overcome limiting and negative beliefs, how to love the word no, and much, much more. To download your free training, simply go to thekickasslife.com/free. That's thekickasslife.com/FRE.
Hi, this is Beth Hennessy, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Want to make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
So, good morning. It's David here, and I am recording this in Colorado Springs. I just opened up my curtains to the most gorgeous vista you've ever seen. Beautiful snow-capped mountains, the water, the fresh blanket of snow on everything, and blue skies. In fact, I'm going to put a photograph up for the show notes, and so you can go into thekickasslife.com, have a look at that. Don't always remember to listen, to have a read of the show notes. We try and give you a little bit more in there, and we're really wanting to do a better job as well. So let us know if there's things we can improve. Let us know. Let us know what you want, and we can make it happen. But today, I want to dedicate this show to a young boy who lost his life in Boston just a few days ago, Martin Richard. And there's that wonderful picture of him that's been sort of circulated around the world. No more hurting people. And he's holding up a peace sign from a peace rally that he did. And my heart goes out to him and all the victims. A lot of amputations, a lot of people who have lost their legs and arms and family members, of course. So a lot of devastation. But I want to sort of take this into a global conversation because obviously, you know, there's things happening around the world. And I want to sort of bring a level of hope and maybe a strategy that we as kick-ass life practitioners can start to think about maybe a little bit more clearly on some of the things we can do. First of all, you know, I arrived here, no luggage, after 7 or 8 hours of delays. And I've met a lot of people in the airports who lose things, lose luggage, they're delayed and they're so angry and upset and frustrated and yelling at the flight attendants, you know, and really to put it in perspective, you think of Martin's sister, Jane, who is probably going to lose both her legs, but certainly has lost one leg, as a little girl who loves to dance. And that really puts, I think, life in perspective. There's so much going on in the world. As kick-ass life practitioners, you know, it's not about the circumstances that are happening to us. It's really how we respond to them or react. And there's two ways, right? We can react, we can respond. But I really thought, you know, having been someone who's lived in many parts of the world where there are trouble, I lived in Israel for a year, and the Palestine-Israeli conflict. I grew up in England at a time, you know, in the 70s and 80s when Ireland and England were basically at war. But certainly the Irish, the Protestants and Catholics were fighting. We had bombings. And so, you know, my brother was in the army at the time. And sort of looking at and knowing the stories of people that live in that type of environment on a daily basis. And then looking, of course, what's happening in Iraq and different parts of Africa. But it's really sound, I think, because of the way that the news is portrayed. And this is no political statement. I don't have a political bone in my body. I just want people to lead greater lives. And I want people to realize that it really is up to us. We have a choice. We have we have more than choices. We have ways of again responding to what's going on in the world, or ways of reacting. And I think the way to react from something that happened in Boston last week, of course, is with a lot of fear or anger. And you know, there's a real danger in the separation that can happen when we become angry at whole races of people, which I think happens. I mean, I see the division sometimes. But what really happened for me, and what I started to see by living in cultures that were at war with each other, and really penetrating both sides of the people. And I mean, I used to play on an Arab soccer team against Israelis, and you know, the Palestinian crisis obviously still goes on today, and it's changed and it's evolved, and you know, and again, I'm not going to choose sides here. It's not what I'm trying to do, but I want to look at it from both sides and say, you know, that my experience in living in a country at war, and I remember how absolutely staggering it was for me to wake up on a bus in Israel and have an Uzi laying on my leg, because every person in Israel is a soldier, and the soldiers carry their Uzis and, you know, on the bus with them. And it was something that was very, very different for me growing up in England, where there really wasn't, police didn't even carry guns when I was growing up. Guns weren't in our country at all. So really what I want to talk about is what's really happening. Is the world becoming more violent? Is there a need for greater fear? Or as kick-ass life practitioners, can we be the people that look beyond the crisis? Can we be the people that penetrate deeply into the hearts of a whole race of people, even though there's extremists? And I remember that, you know, in even seeing, again, I'll use Israel as an example. I know we have a lot of people in Israel who listen to the show. So again, excuse me, I'm using Israel as an example only because it was such an impact on me as a person. And I remember in Jerusalem, you know, when you look at Jerusalem, it's cut into sections, you know, so you have an Arab quarter and you have the Jewish quarter and you have the other quarters that are there, the Christian quarter. But the idea, though, is that when I looked at the extremes of any culture I've been into, and at that time in Jerusalem, I remember the Hasidic, which is the more of the Orthodox Jewish practices. And for me at the time, it was absolutely so extreme for me as a person. I didn't understand it. So because I didn't understand it, it bothered me. I became very judgmental. I just didn't understand. I didn't see. I saw it on face value. And that was it. And that's something I really realized a lot, you know. And I remember traveling through Guatemala and being up in the northern regions of the Petén, you know, and coming across guerrillas, and they were young boys. I mean, boys my son's age, 13 and 15, and carrying these massive guns, you know, and they had Rambo necklaces around their neck, you know, and bandanas on, and they were really indoctrinated with hatred. But there's this young guerrilla warfare, and I was fortunate that I was up in this region with a Catholic priest, and who took me up into some of the most remote villages that hadn't seen anyone but him in years and years and years. So I was able to really see into some of these situations. And again, what I feel is what I've come out with. It's not a question of what I agree with, because, I mean, that's not what I'm... This show's not about that. It's not about what's right and wrong. It's about having tolerance and understanding and really being able to look at any situation. My brother, here's a great example. My brother, gay. And, you know, when he grew up, I mean, my brother would be, he died a number of years ago, and he would be probably about 56, 57 now. But at that time, you know, the way the world viewed him as a gay man, you know, it was horrific in so many ways that he could get beaten up because of his own orientation, you know, and what he chose to do with his life and you know, how he felt inside, right? And so, again, it doesn't matter where we're looking. And again, I know this is a pretty heavy show in some ways, but I kind of want it to be. I want to get into this conversation because I want us to look, anyone who listens to this show, and yesterday we had the biggest spike in our history of the show. I mean, really, we were over 1,000, almost 1,500 new listeners over and above what we're always constantly growing, but there's a massive spike, and the day before that was also a massive spike. So there's something happening, you know. Obviously, we're penetrating a little bit more deeply, and you know, maybe you're sharing it with more people, which is awesome. I haven't really put a lot of energy into sharing the show, but again, normally on my 30-minute shows, I will sit and talk about stuff that's important to me. And so, hopefully, if you're listening for the first time, you know, as we enter this conversation, maybe listen to some of the other shows and get perspective on what a kick-ass like practitioner can do in the world. And I do believe that we have the possibility, the ability to walk into any situation, any crisis, and bring a level of light, understanding, non-judgment into people's worlds where there is hatred, and it still exists in so many areas of the world. There's still so much hatred. But here's what I wanted to share. I wanted to share some of the stats. And there's some interesting stats that are coming out, and I want to read some stuff to you, right? So I read this article, and this is how it started. It says, it seems as if violence is everywhere, but is it really on the run? Yes, thousands of people have died in bloody unrest from Africa to Pakistan, while terrorists plot bombings and kidnappings. Wars drag on in Iraq and Afghanistan. In peaceful Norway, a man massacred 69 youths in July. In Mexico, headless bodies turn up, victims of drug cartels. This month, 8 people die in a shooting in a California hair salon. So you can see when this was, this is a little older, right? He said, yet historically, we've never had it this peaceful. That's what they're saying. So that's the thesis of 3 books, including one by prominent Harvard psychologist Steven Pinker. Statistics reveal dramatic reductions in war, death, family violence, racism, rape, murder, and all sorts of mayhem. In his book, Pinker writes, the decline of violence may be the most significant and least appreciated development in the history of our species. And it runs counter to what the mass media is reporting, and essentially what we feel in our gut. Pinker and other experts say the reality is not painted in bloody anecdotes, but demonstrated in black and white spreadsheets and historical documents that tell a story of a world moving away from violence. That's what I said to you about the show. I wanted this to be a show a little bit about hope. And even though this happened, there was an extreme situation where somebody, either an individual who has a lot of hurt going on inside of them, does something that absolutely makes no sense and creates carnage. And I had 2 friends running in the race, Susan and Rick. So we have friends at the race. But really what's happening around the world is the world is actually becoming less violent. Now, this is scientific data now. This isn't what the media is portraying. But there is I think, what happens with fear. And I feel fear. And again, Americans, I know that you're my largest audience, bar none. But I want to talk to you a little bit on the differences when I cross the border from Canada to America. People say, well, what's different? And I say, well, what I feel, not everywhere, but what I feel is there's a higher level of fear in America than there is in Canada. And I feel it when I cross the border. I feel a difference in the way people perceive just everyday things. And I ask the question, well, why? Why do I feel that way in when I'm in the U.S.? And I'm in the U.S. right now. I'm talking from Colorado Springs, which looks like a postcard. It's absolutely beautiful and idyllic. And I think what it is, I think the way that the media really tell stories can often do that. That sort of eyewitness news. And I've often even said to my son the other day, I said, Cal, the shame is that people are really guilty these days until they prove themselves innocent. And it's because the media has such a strong hold and they want to dramatize everything. And, you know, even last night when I arrived at the hotel, I sat down and had a quick bite to eat, and it was pretty late. And the television was on above the bar, but it was no sound. And there was just this perpetual image of the destruction. And of course, people want to know, but I wonder what the cost is, you know, when we live in a place of fear. And I know right now, you know, as I'm selling my farm, you know, the people buying it, they've been up to the house maybe 6 or 7 or 8 times. And I always leave the doors open. And I don't, you know, the other day I left my keys in my car, you know, and I almost feel this, you know, is that too far to be too open? Maybe it is. But I feel this great sense of peace. And it's like even my home. I mean, I've had a break-in, not in the home I've been in right now, but the home I share with my ex-wife, we were broken into and people stole stuff. But from the moment it happened to the very next moment, once you know the police had left, and you know it was just over. We never thought about it anymore. We didn't start to live with fear of what else could happen. It was truly just one of these things that, yeah, it does happen. There are break-ins, and you know, pretty much drug related. You know, and we live in a very, very safe town. But you know, someone broke in, stole some stuff, and it left. That was it. What we made of it, and how we make the story up, is really what what interests me today. And really what I would say is, how do we, as kick-ass like practitioners, how do we look at all the arguments in the world, all the hostilities between two sides, where, I mean, at the time with Ireland and, you know, the Protestants and Catholics, I had friends in both camps. And, you know, there were people that would have meetings with kids from both sides to show each other that, to show these kids that they were good people. And really, there was something going on in the world, something that people disagree with. And there was obviously, I mean, some of the things that are happening that we see around the world with these shootings, where the, you know, mass murders, I think the glamorization of these people has created, you know, when people have, and they typically find it to be brain damage of some kind, or a brain, you know, they're not functioning, they're dealing with depression. Obviously, something has to be going on mentally for someone to go and do that. But the dramatization has caused that. But what I love about this article with Pinker, how he talks about, he says in his new book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined, Pinker makes the case that a smarter, more educated world is becoming more peaceful in several statistically significant ways. His findings are based on peer-reviewed studies published by other academics using examinations of graveyard surveys, historical records. The rate of genocides, death per world population, was 1,400 times higher in 1942 than in 2008. There were fewer than 20 democracies in 1946. Now there's close to 100. Meanwhile, the number of authoritarian countries has dropped from a high of almost 90 in 1976 to about 25 now. So he says, Pinker says, one of the main reasons for the drop in violence is that we are smarter. IQ tests show that the average teenager is smarter with each generation. I know we don't like to say that, parents, but they're actually smarter than us. Get over it. The tests are constantly adjusted to keep average at 100. And a teenager who now would score 100 would have scored 118 in 1950 and 130 in 1910. So this year's average kid would have been a near genius a century ago. And that increase in intelligence translates into a kinder, gentler world, Pinker says. And I love this because it's something I notice. You know, I did a lot of work with abused, sexually abused and physically abused kids. And one thing we noticed was that when you brought education into the factor, that's where you could stop the cycle of violence. And so education plays this massive role. And so I know there's a lot of teachers out there, and one of my big things is helping teachers learn how to teach better, because I think teachers are taught what to teach but not really necessarily how to teach. And I teach a system called accelerated whole brain learning, where, you know, kids are really engaged in the area of learning. But then when we look at, you know, what can we do as kick-ass life practitioners, and how important our schools, like in Africa, what they show, and that's why, you know, I'm involved in some work over there. What they show is that when we educate young women in third world impoverished countries all over the world, when a woman can get an education, that the incidences of early marriage, early pregnancy, of the mutilation of circumcision, female circumcision, which I still can't believe exists in the world today, but it absolutely does exist, where a young girl has her clitoris cut right out. I mean, it's just a horrific thing, but it happens. And I know this is a hard show, but I want to talk about it. I mean, I want to talk about this idea that education plays a role. So how can we help? Well, I mean, some of the things we can be doing is really fine. I mean, if we have a chance to do more, if we're in a position to help out, is to help create education throughout the world, is to educate people out of the darkness, out of, because it's ignorance quite often, you know, because when you bring two sides together, and that's what I saw in Israel, when the Palestinian Arabs and the Israelis, when we played afterwards and we sat together and we laughed and joked together, you know, they're just two human beings that grow up on different sides of an argument, and when indoctrinated with hate, you know, it creates a very, very different understanding. But when education plays its role, right, it can really, really, really make a difference, right? So anyway, so I want to talk about that and just say that the what Pinker talks about, and it's a great article, all right? You know, it's across the board, is the world is changing and becoming a much safer place. And there are these incidences like 9/11, which he talks about, actually. He talks about it being sort of a one-off. He says terrorism doesn't account for many deaths. September 11 was off the scale. There was never a terrorist attack before or after that that had as many deaths. But what it does do is it generates fear, he said. It's hard for many people to buy the decline in violence. Even those who deal in peace for a living at first couldn't believe it when the first academics started counting up battle deaths and recognizing these trends. He says in 1988, Andrew Mack, then head of strategic planning for UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, said a look at the statistics showed the world was becoming less violent. The reaction from his professional peacekeeping colleagues was, it's not true. They told Mack, arguing that the 1990s had been the worst decade in UN history. And what the truth was, though, when they looked at all the stats, is it just wasn't. So he and Goldstein, the guys that did these all of this study and wrote these books and these peer reviews, believe it's possible that an even greater drop in violence could occur in the future. Goldstein says that there's a turn on the cliche that is... we're actually going from the fire to a frying pan, and that's progress. It's not as bad as the fire. So I wanted to put that out there as hope, because I think there's a lot of people right now who really have this this sort of misunderstanding. Like me, it would be very easy to say, oh, the world's getting more violent, but the truth is we're more exposed to the violence, and we're brought right into the front line of that violence. And so, again, what can we do? As kick-ass life practitioners, we can get involved if we have a chance to help out. We can get involved with education, because we know education plays a massive role. I have a friend, Cynthia Kersey, who I'm going to bring her on the show. She does a lot of work with building schools in impoverished places around the world. And Richard Branson does the same thing around really educating people out of hatred. And that, again, you know, if you're in a place right now in your mind, and I know this show is broadcast all over the world, 164 countries, ladies and gentlemen, and massive spikes in new growth of people listening. So thank you for that. And I know this is not my typical type of show, but I hope that in some way it resonates with you from my real experience of what I think the world needs is really less judgment and more understanding. When you're standing opposite someone in a different issue, right, instead of resisting it in the beginning, it could be the gun issue. I mean, I have a gun at home. Listen, I'm a hunter. You know, I was a vegetarian for many, many years, but my sons eat meat, and I thought, well, you know, I'll go hunting. I call it really hiking with a gun, because I've only ever harvested one animal, because I'm not a very good hunter. But I still have a gun at home. And I grew up in a world like in England where guns just weren't there, right? So, you know, in Canada, a lot of hunters have rifles at home, and, you know, normally we keep them in safes or safe places, and we keep them, you know, the bullets and the guns separate, right? But an issue like that, which is, you know, right now, after some of these shootings, is very controversial around the way, especially in America, the right to bear arms. But whether it's that, or whether it's some form of racism, it doesn't matter what argument it is. If you don't understand it, if you feel inside of you there's a level of hatred, or a level of, like, I don't like them because, or those people are that, or, you know, all Arabs are. If there's anything like that going on in your conversation, in your own little head, what I'm going to ask is that you just stop for a second and notice where the conversation's coming from, and ask yourself some better questions. Is, well, I wonder what would happen if I educated myself more about the situation, if I actually, you know, went and learned more about an Arab culture. And I've spent a lot of time in Arab cultures. I've lived in Egypt and Israel, and that's not Arab, but it's Palestinian Arab. And so, of course, it's half and half, right? You've got the Israelis and you've got the Arabs. And you've got, I've been in Morocco, Tunisia, I mean, Algeria, and so many. And I've had some remarkably beautiful experiences. And so what I found for myself as a kick-ass life practitioner is that there is no situation where we can put a blanket over everything, where we can say Americans are, or Canadians are, or this is, or that is, or gay people are, right? And I think that if we're struggling in any of those arenas, if there's any kind of hostility within us around a subject, then I think it's our right, or it's necessary for us to get more deeply involved in it. And so if you find yourself and that there's a hatred towards a certain sect of people because what? Where does it come from? And typically it'll come from some form of indoctrination that's passed down, or it comes from, you know, parts of listening to news broadcasts without really getting into the full story. And what I find the most interesting thing is getting to know the people. So of any conflict, and what, again, I found with the Protestants and Catholics back when that war was going on, and it was a deadly war. I mean, there were bombings all the time, and there was a lot of death around that particular war. But beautiful people, both sides of the argument, and then extremists within were people who believed they were fighting for something. And that's the interesting thing. You know, a lot of guerrillas, people who, and we've seen it with the Sinn Féin in Ireland, you know, go on to become political leaders. And we've seen that with, you know, Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela was a fighter. You know, I mean, they laid bombs and they fought, you know, the foundation of Israel in 1948. I mean, David Ben-Gurion, there was Moshe Dayan and Golda Meir, and there was all these freedom fighters who later went on to become, you know, leaders of a country. And so, you know, sometimes these wars that are going on are started because people feel it's right. And so, again, you know, when we get inside of the argument, I'm not taking sides here on any side of the equation. I'm taking the side of that I think within every argument is good somewhere, and that maybe the bullets and bombs are not the answer, but they have been the answer through history. And what we're seeing is that's trending downwards, and the world is becoming safer, and there's less carnage, even though it doesn't seem that way. The evidence is supporting that. But the difference is, though, where are you at in your inside thinking? Where are you at with the way you view people? Where are you at the way you view gay people, or the way you view black people, or the way you view white people, or the way you view, you know, wherever that hatred lays within us, or not even hatred, that misunderstanding, that misguidance, that's the bit I want to talk about today. That's the bit I would love to say, look, what if as kick-ass like practitioners, we can become masters of stepping into any issue and listening to both sides openly without the judgment, and then really working on our own inner judgments, where we become more understanding of people and their unique situations, their unique cultures, their unique upbringings. And I've always said that, you know, this is going to be a really hard one to hear as well, that, you know, people on death row have done the worst atrocities. I know damn well within them is a piece of gold. And if that piece of gold had been found and rubbed and nurtured and cherished at some point, then there was a true possibility that what they ended up doing as an expression of their own inner hatred, because I think that's what it is, you know, we can only do to the outside world what's going on within us. We have to hate ourselves a lot to be able to go out and hate and kill other people. There has to be something going on, or we're defending something we truly believe in. Well, I mean, there's two parts there, right? So I've talked about a lot of different countries, and I've talked about a lot of different ideas around the way that people live, both against each other and together. And we have seen over time that with education, with understanding. Excuse me one second. Yes, sir? Hello? Sorry, look at that. Just about to end the show. Yes, sir?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay, thank you. Sorry, I'm just on a phone call. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it very much. All right, my bag just arrived. How's that? Okay, so, you know, as we end the show, there you go, live as it gets. As we end the show, I want to end it with this real, again, this thought of Martin and his family, and I can't imagine losing a son in any kind of situation. I can't imagine what the family's dealing with, and the people in Boston and around the world. Again, if we expand that around the world, there are situations around the world right now that are very, very similar, have happened just like that. But, you know, when a life is taken in a way like that, I think what Martin represents to me in that sign and those two hearts and the word peace is that there's so much hope, and that, you know, that his legacy will live on in each of us, is that, you know, to stop hurting people, and that we have a responsibility to ourselves to stop hurting people, to stop hurting ourselves, is to step into that greater life, that bigger picture, that, you know, that unique situation of unconditional love, of our own imperfection, and really looking across any divide, any time we misunderstand, any time we judge, and then look at that judgment and use it as a springboard into understanding, a springboard into stepping in and sitting down with it. And you don't even have to like the people you sit down with initially. But if you ask enough questions, I think what you're going to do is you're going to find that the human, that thread of humanity that is twisted in all of us, that thread of absolute beauty that really is the human condition. And when you think of each little baby that comes out, and you look at how pure that, when you look into a baby's eyes, that true unconditional love you feel and see immediately, or a young puppy, I see it in those two areas of unconditional love, is that it truly is something that can be achieved, but it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage to step into places we don't understand. It takes a lot of courage to step into an argument that we think we understand. It takes a lot of courage to look at things that are terrible and attempt to find understanding and not anger and hatred. And it takes a lot of courage to build a bridge between two arguments. And we've seen it time and time and time again. Nelson Mandela, when he came out of prison, 27 years in a cell, came out, and he wasn't going to hate. He came out with this idea of love. And now South Africa still struggles in many, many ways. But Nelson Mandela's legacy of forgiveness is the most remarkable testimony to what's possible in the human spirit. Is a guy locked in a tiny cell for 27 years and chipping rocks, and being able to come out to lead a nation to say, guess what, we can have our country back. We can take away apartheid, which again was a great division between, you know, two colors of skin. And, you know, and it was the first time I ever, when I was in Johannesburg, it's the first time I ever realized what it was like to feel prejudiced against color for myself, because it's very easy as a white person to walk through the world and never ever feel that. But in Johannesburg, it was the first time I felt the color of my skin could be something that could have got me killed at that time. There was a lot of violence, and I never really understood it. I never stood in somebody else's skin where they feel prejudiced all the time because of the color of their skin. And so my heart does go out now, and my deeper understanding of that condition, and saying, hey, you know, it's up to all of us, everyone on this show around the world. I mean, this show is, I can't believe how many people in Korea right now are listening to this show. I should read the list of countries. You'll be absolutely blown away. But Korea, I not North Korea, because I don't think there's any computers in there, but in South Korea, we have a huge listening audience, you know, and there's a division there between two countries. And again, I'm not politically motivated at all, but I'm humanly motivated to say, you know, we have a chance. We have a chance to not hate on a scale, and to catch ourselves in those moments of hatred, and catch ourselves in those moments of judgment, and say, I wonder what they're really like. I wonder. I should invite them for tea and figure them out. I should invite them for tea and sit down and just discover who they are. And every time I've done that, what I found is beneath the misunderstandings, or beneath the indoctrinations, and beneath the absolute divide of hatred, are people who yearn for the same thing, who crave the same things, who desire the same things, you know, to be loved and to love, to feel like life they can make a difference in some significant way. And again, this is much easier to say on a Western part of the world, but in a part of the world where, you know, food and water and struggle, and just to be able to live each day, I mean, and just so you know, the hierarchy of needs aren't even met. I understand it's a very different conversation, but I do believe that love plays a unique role, and when self-love is something we inflict on ourselves every day, and we love the imperfect part of ourselves, and the parts that make no sense, and the crappy parts of ourselves. And then we can go out and we can start to notice in others their own crappy parts and their own parts that don't make sense, and the bits that they don't like about themselves, and start to build these bridges toward each other. And whether they become great friends or whether we just build bridges of understanding and bridges of acceptance that, you know what, that's them, you know, that's how they are. And in spite of that, even though I don't agree with everything, there's another beautiful human being beyond us. So again, as a tribute to young Martin, I hope this made sense. I know as I sit here looking out of the window right now across this gorgeous vista, knowing that this show is about to be broadcast around the world, 164 countries, and that there's people who are really in the middle of this crisis, Iran and Iraq, they listen to the show, you know, Korea, you know, there are so many, China right now, you know, there are so many areas of the world all through Africa, you know, and you know that are listening right now. And I just hope that if there's somebody in your village, your town, that there is a misunderstanding or someone you hate, that you can just open your heart just a tiny bit and wonder. And learn about their side, learn about their story. Educate. Let's educate ourselves out of hatred, and let's help educate parts of the world out of their out of the darkness that some of them have to live in. Again, and I think of all these young girls who are victimized and brutalized and circumcised, and it's just it's awful. And we know that the only thing we can help them, the only way we can help them, is to educate them, is to show them there is a different way. And that's why, you know, this show becomes very important, because for some people, it's listening to this kind of show and some of the guests that we bring on that will really allow them to start to see the world differently and to say, you know what, I can have more. I can step into something greater. But it takes all of us, and us in this Western world that live with such comfort and we have so much and often are not so grateful. You know, we have to start to understand there's a big world out there, and we're global citizens now, and our countries are made up of all ethnicities and all cultures and all orientations and all desires and dreams. And we have to be, as kick-ass like practitioners, we have to be masters at embracing everything that's different and really stepping into it with the wonder of a young child and saying, you know what, I wonder, and really allowing our hearts to open fully and step into things that are most uncomfortable and really show up and be really present with it and find the beauty and the wonder. Be fascinated and curious. Anyway, that's my rant. I've been on my soapbox since I woke up, and I just want to send my love to all of you, and especially to these families in Boston right now who are dealing with this, and families around the world that are dealing with your own crisis. We understand this is a global thing and that there are so many issues going on around the world, not just in America. And again, I am broadcasting from America today, and tomorrow I'll be back in Canada. And I send my love to you all, and we'll see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.